Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Each week at this time, we take on a very important topic, generally a controversial topic. We not only take on the topic, but we try to find someone who is considered a leading voice of reason, wisdom, and in this case, a long-term clinician, someone who's worked for decade upon decade in the field. We're going to look at the larger overarching issue is the corruption of science. And we're going to be speaking with both an MD, board certified, and a scientist. And he has worked in some of the most prestigious labs, including he worked at one time with the U.S. Public Health Service. He is a psychiatrist, again, board certified, but more importantly than being a psychiatrist, he is not your typical psychiatrist. His name is Peter Bregan. He is also the author of some very important works, articles, and books. And at his age, and he can tell you his age, normally a person would be retired, enjoying the golden years. He's not. Every day, I mean every day, he puts on that spiritual armor to go into the trenches to fight corruption, malfeasance, disinformation, fake news by the establishment, by the general media, by Anthony Fauci, the U.S. Public Health Service, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the CDC, the FDA, the World Health Organization, Bill Gates, and others. And he is respected because of his tireless efforts. But more importantly, I've known Peter for a long time, for decades. In fact, I interviewed him almost 50 years ago. That's how long we go back, 50 years, half a century. And he and his wife work together. And so I'm on a telephone because of the uniqueness of what we're trying to do today with this Zoom call. And my microphone, for some reason right now, is not working. So please excuse the fact that I'm having to do this the old-fashioned way with a telephone. But you'll be able to see and hear and listen to Peter. And it's nice to have you back with us, Peter.
It's great to be with you, Gary. You know,
Peter, the first...
Yes, go ahead.
I want to start by having an overview. Please explain to the audience what you see as the compromises that have been made. And we're going to start first in the health field, and specifically with psychiatry. We'll get later into COVID. But right now with psychiatry, the average person in the United States is stressed. In fact, I'm willing to bet that at least 40% of the American population could qualify under current diagnostic and statistical manual criteria as being clinically depressed or clinically suffering from anxiety or some other condition. They're going to make that diagnosis, confirming that it was all made scientifically because there is a brain chemical imbalance. And that has been the underlying theme for such a long time. You're having problems because there's an imbalance in your brain. Your dopamine, your serotonin levels are not where they should be. And this drug or drugs will help you. And yet, I just watched a commercial on a news program for a drug to help people with the side effects of tardive dyskinesia. I'm thinking, wow. Tardive dyskinesia, that was terrible. All the tics people go through, the jerky motions, and suddenly their tongue flares out or they start to chatter. Their body goes into contortions. We've had that for over 60 years. So now you're expected to take a drug for the side effects of taking drugs. And then you listen to the disclaimer about how bad it is, and you'd ask, well, why would I take something that has those side effects? And yet, when was it that psychiatry stopped sitting and talking with someone, trying to understand the conditions in their life that altered their perception of reality and try to help them in a more humane and humanistic way? That's almost rarely done today. It's drugs for everything. You were one of the very first psychiatrists. And another friend of mine at the time, Alan Putterman, another psychiatrist, and Dr. Martin Feldman, who I believe you knew, who was board certified in psychiatry, but was a top professor and scientist and neurologist. And they all said, no, we're not using drugs. So I'm giving you a long introduction so you can then start to dispel the myths. of mental illness in the United States, especially when they can diagnose a six-month-old child with a psychiatric disorder and then drug them, as if there's any science to back any of this up. The forum is yours.
Gary, it is a joy to be doing another film with you. We do. We go back, way, way back to Pacifica, I think. And you had a radio show and were one of the very first people with a very large audience to dare to have Peter Bregan on the air in the very, very early years when I was taking on the lobotomists and conducted an international campaign to stop psychiatric brain mutilation. It's interesting that you mentioned the six-month-old, you know, child, diagnosing them. Because I want to weave through my presentation about the past with what's going on today. And today we're looking at their forcing small children and eventually infants to take GMO injections that modify the workings of our own body to make our own body make the protein spikes of the Chinese coronavirus variant. It's really, you know, we wonder about GMO engineering corn. We're GMO engineering our whole population, and now we want to get down to doing it to the children again, because the children are vulnerable. And if you can force children to take psychiatric drugs or vaccines, you have a real strong power over the society with your technology. And going back again to the campaign that brought us together in the early 1970s, where I was fighting lobotomy, they were getting away with lobotomizing 3, 4, 5, and 6-year-old children. They were going after the most vulnerable children in the country, which were abandoned black children in Mississippi at the University of Mississippi at Jackson, and putting electrodes in their heads. And the kids would walk around the wards ghoulishly with these electrodes hanging out so that O.J. Andy, who's now deceased, could come and pick them up with his own ambulance from the hospital at the university and bring them down to the university, where he would toy with their brains, literally just play, stimulate here, burn a hole there. That kind of ghoulishness. And at the time, what appalled me just about as much as putting myself in the place of a little black child, and I'm isolated on these wards and my families don't visit me anymore and all these things are being done to me and I'm kind of losing my brain. The other side of it was how little of any kind of protest there was or psychiatrists to join me in stopping lobotomy from coming back. And I'll link that in a minute to what's going on today, too. The University of Mississippi was the one exception, because I called down there, my young psychiatrist in those days, nobody knows what I'm doing or who I am. And I called to the chairman of the Department of Psychiatry and I said, did you know there's a neurosurgeon, professor of neurosurgery on your hospital staff who's doing surgery on the brains of little children, burning holes in their brains, stimulating them on your local institution? By then, I probably knew it was segregated. I had to have somebody go and, you know, check it out and report back. And he said, no, I didn't. O.J. Andy is down the hall from me. I had no idea he was doing this. And he actually, on his own, while I worked on publicizing Andy and humiliating Andy as much as I could, Dr. Andy, he went ahead and made it virtually impossible for him to do further operations. And that's the only incident I can recall of a psychiatrist intervening along with me or on their own to stop this from going on. Well, one of the things that Ginger began talking to me about at the start of COVID-19 was transhumanism, which was an idea I'm sure, Gary, you have looked at for a lot longer than me. And I had not thought about what is transhumanism. And it's a part of the COVID-19 background story of the transhumanists involved. Klaus Schwab is a transhumanist, so is Bill Gates. But now what I'm saying is that psychiatry is fundamentally transhumanism, which is that you do not in any way respect or treasure the existence of a child or a human being, a grown adult, as having inherent merit or worth. Instead, you can get enough power, you can go ahead and take any number of humanity, whether by a vaccine or in this case, lobotomizing of little children, and you can transform them into something else, something better in your eyes. Now, the irony is that the better is never better for the person, because we don't have any physical ways of transforming the human spirit, the human will, human psychology into something better. That's the work of individual human beings. That's the work of giving humans more freedom in the world. That's the work that our founders did in bringing a democratic republic to a large nation for the first time in the history of the world. That's all the psychological and political work that we have to do as human beings, the religious work in developing the ideas of Judaism and then Christianity, of that we should love one another as God loves us, love God, love one another, that's the essence of the message. And that means treasure one another, which has been a rallying cry for resistance to authority and abuse ever since. So way back then, I was fighting transhumanism without knowing it. That there was actually this philosophy that this is a good thing to do. We were able to link it, though, also very early on to totalitarianism. There was a professor at Yale, came from Spain, named Jose Delgado, and he wrote a book connecting the psychosurgery experiments in which he was involved, the other main group that was involved, with the head of neurosurgery at the Mass General Hospital. I went up against the most powerful figure, perhaps in medicine at the time, who was literally the head of neurosurgery, William Sweet at the Mass General. And Jose Delgado was writing about how people may think they're the most important thing in the world to themselves, but they're nothing, they're nobody. It's the society that matters, the powers that be, and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are not relevant to scientific reality, which is there is no free will. We can control people, manipulate people. And it was all very, very primitive. And then another thing about that, which ties in so much to what's going on today with COVID-19, was as I searched into the funding of these groups, to my shock, I found out that the psychosurgeons in Boston, who were in fact promoting that they could have ways of stopping the, curing the leaders of the ghetto riots, in other words, African-Americans, Rap Brown comes to mind, and other political protesters, whatever you think of their background politics, which I'm not in favor of, they were human beings who were angry and outraged and had a political viewpoint. And he was saying we could cure them, said it in the New York Times. He said it to the Congress, William Sweet did, and said it in the New York Times. So from the beginning, they had their own political agenda. And because of the political agenda, they had something very special that was didn't have any place in the law, which is they got direct funding, not funding where you apply to NIH and you have to go through peer review. NIH was ordered and by the legislature, Congress, to give money directly to William Sweet for these surgery operations. And the villainous LEAA, the Justice Department, was giving money jointly. So you have at the time, the DARPA, which is our military's cloak and dagger researchers. And in this case, you have the Justice Department's LEAA funding this kind of thing. So from the very beginning, it was clear to me that government and industry and political forces would all happily use psychiatry. Representing medicine would be happy to do whatever they were asked to do, including having a free hand in doing these awful things. And then not long after I got in, by the way, I stopped pretty much all the psychosurgery around the world. I worked with Congress in ways no one could do now. I wrote legislation. We got a big psychosurgery commission form that declared psychosurgery experimental. We had a big trial that declared that under the Nuremberg Code, you couldn't volunteer for psychosurgery if you're in a state mental hospital because you're not free to volunteer. And that stopped it in all the state facilities. So we got a lot done that I don't think we could get done anymore. But in the process, I'm getting this picture that few other human beings had of this massive collusion behind social control, oppression of people. And then people said to me, Peter, look, you did all this work on psychosurgery. What about ECT? And so I became a career reformer. And we ran into even bigger stumbling blocks with ECT. I did, by the way, I was the medical expert in the very first psychosurgery case that was won against the Cleveland Clinic. I think it was perhaps in the 1990s, and the surgeon had to stop operating at the Cleveland Clinic. And I was also the expert in the first and only electroshock suit ever won against doctors and both these malpractice. And why? Why was I the only psychiatrist to ever stand up or even go into court on these issues? Because something happens, you see, and we're seeing it so much with COVID-19, that when a profession is told what to do by the authorities, they do it. You know, in Nazi Germany, the most obedient of all the professions was psychiatry, and behind that, all of medicine. And then I think it was the judges and the lawyers, the people who have authority, want authority, believe in authority. So when I started looking at ECT, it was the same thing all over again. Now, I didn't discover this, but it was found that, but I worked with the person who was working on it. The CIA was funding electroshock experiments, obliterating the mind in Canada at the big McGill Medical Center. Lots of lawsuits against it. This is not conspiracy theory. You can Google the New York Times. Even they, back in those days, covered it a little bit, because there were lawsuits by well-known Canadian husbands on behalf of their wives. They were trying to erase memories and reprogram. It's kind of the big ideal of the kind of thing that the communists would love to do, the extreme fascists would love to do, the extreme progressives would love to do. And we found all of them working together, really, in the book, our book with me and Ginger wrote, COVID-19, the global conspirators.
Peter, I need to ask you some specific questions, if you could please, short answers on these.
Sure.
First, I knew Linus Pauling. He was a friend, and Pauling said that when Sakharov and Solzhenitsyn and other leading Soviet scientists, philosophers, dissidents were attacked, they were always attacked by the psychiatrists, the medical community in Russia. They were given electroconvulsive therapy, they were given drugs, and they were abused terribly. And what came to be a very important conversation I had one evening with Pauling, he said, but you know, we could not get the American psychiatrist or the American Psychiatric Association to come together to condemn what was being done. Individuals would condemn them, but these were philosophers and journalists and others who didn't necessarily have a background, certainly not in psychiatry. So psychiatry in the United States that was really started by Benjamin Rush, who was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence and the doctor that bled George Washington to death. Bleeding was common back then. He was the one who also used African Americans as human guinea pigs. He was the one who suggested they didn't have feelings, therefore you didn't need any form of anesthesia. By the way, his face still adorns the seal of the American Psychiatric Association today. So in my opinion, and again, that's my opinion, the profession of psychiatry as a whole is not a legitimate science. It is more of a religion, a cult, and the individual psychiatrists like yourself or Michael Schachter or other ones who choose not to practice by the rules are generally considered heretical and pushed out. Could you say at this moment that psychiatry is not a legitimate healing profession and it's actually anti-science? Are you able to say that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it became increasingly clear to me that psychiatry was practically a weapon against people who were deviating in whatever way that the authorities defined in the society. And all of the armamentarium, lobotomy, shock, and drugs, all harm the brain. Psychiatry has no tools that help the brain. And since psychiatry is masquerading as a science, it really becomes a materialistic religion. That is, it takes political issues. For example, I was on 60 Minutes so many years ago, blowing the whistle on African-American naval people who had been going through a segregation resistance in the Navy, and they got a shock machine on the boat and they shocked a large number of young men, African-American men. Psychiatry has always done bidding. During slavery, a psychiatry invented drapotomania, I think it was called, the running away disease for slaves. And it's been used in every totalitarian country to suppress political dissidents. China, Russia, Cuba have all just outright done it. You mentioned what happened in Russia. They developed a diagnosis for the politicians called sluggish schizophrenia. That is, you had no symptoms of what we would call psychosis or loss of touch with reality. You were not in touch with the reality of the regime. Sluggish schizophrenia, you were slow to see the truth or something. And one of the dissidents from Russia described the effects of Haldol, a drug we use routinely in the US and still do, one of the most neurotoxic agents ever created under the guise of medicine. And he would describe how as he got more and more of the Haldol, he would lose his deepest feelings and abilities. So in the beginning, the most superficial things were actually things like his political attitudes or beliefs, and he'd lose track of them. And eventually, he didn't even care about his family and loved ones, the deepest things we have that go to the roots of our humanity. And that was Haldol, and we still use Haldol today, and it's the model for all the current psychiatric drugs that are powerful, and some of them now are used as antidepressants. Abilify, you could be given Abilify, a potent Haldol-like drug, it's really called neuroleptics for poisoning the neuron. You could be given Invega, you could be given Risperdal or Zyprexa, and you could be told that they're really antidepressants because the FDA has approved some of them to go along with antidepressants. So if you're still having feelings, even though you're on your antidepressants, boy, you take Abilify or Invega or Seroquel, which is masquerades as a sleeping pill. You take any of these, you won't have any feelings at all. So the press of all of this is on making people more robotic, more zombie-like. And psychiatry is not a science. It is absolutely, because it's so fundamentally wrong in thinking harming the brain is going to be good for the mind or the spirit. It just won't work.
Let me give you another example here, if you would. Real stories. I'm working on a documentary, which you're going to be in, and it's about psychiatry and the whole mental health field, because they're taking an opportunity that is presented with COVID. So many children are housebound. So many children are not having the normal interactions, as you know, that children need to have. They need to play, yell, scream, wrestle, have fun, explore. And millions of children, instead, are wearing masks, are limited, are not interrelating with children in a normal, natural way. And we have a suicide rate that's off the chart, highest in America's history. Over 100,000 died in the last 12 months, a lot of them taking fentanyl and other psychiatric drugs. And instead of psychiatry saying, maybe we should re-examine what all this is doing, the lockdowns is doing, to the most vulnerable in our society, and think of all the seniors who've committed suicide, because we have a pandemic of loneliness in the United States. And with loneliness, the separation of people from their families, even over the holidays, someone I know, very, very close personal friend, called me depressed. And I said, what's wrong? Well, I was going to go to my family's for Christmas, and they told me not to come because I hadn't been vaccinated. And so I realized I have no place to go, nobody to be with. And because I haven't been vaccinated, I can't go anyplace. I can't go to a movie. I can't do anything. I'm just here in this little tiny apartment. And you start to realize the power of isolation upon the human psyche. None of this has been taken into consideration by the policymakers. It's just vaccinate, vaccinate, vaccinate. Now, and then attack anyone who suggests otherwise. But then we come to this. There is now, in the film, 12 psychiatrists, all highly respected, all board certified, big names. They all diagnosed a person who is totally normal, a woman who is about 34 and a PhD. Within 2 to 6 minutes of meeting her, they all diagnosed her with psychiatric disorders and gave her prescriptions for different types of drugs. So then when they came out of their houses or offices and were filmed on the street, you just diagnosed this person with this condition. What is the scientific basis? What physical test did you do? A blood test, a genetic test? What test? And every single one of them said, well, there is no test to determine a psychiatric problem, any psychiatric problem. Well, if there's no test, then why would you give them a drug that the side effects are suicidal ideation or suicide itself or homicidal acts? If it's purely subjective, why not just give them a placebo? No. No, all drugs. So then a week later, I held a demonstration with several thousand of my audience in front of the Javits Center that was holding the World Congress on Psychiatry. And we were able to get someone inside who filmed a question being asked. Here was the question. Is there any legitimate, scientifically proven, gold standard test that can be done to determine a person's brain chemical imbalance? Every single one of the 7 panelists on the stage, these are the heavyweights, said, no, there's no test. And yet never in any ad, never in any consultation, does the psychiatrist that I'm aware of say, you know something, just so you know, whatever I'm doing right now, it's no different than, you know, a cult. I'm going to tell you my belief, but there's no science behind it. No, it's look at this person. They were depressed. Now look at them taking this drug. They're happy. Oh, and by the way, with distracting music and something going on the screen, and this could also lead to suicide. Then the last point of my question is, I began to see homicides in otherwise normal people, and they all seem normal, including all of the mass killers for about the last 35 years, until you start to look more carefully. And then you start to see the dark side. Almost all of these people were taking antipsychotic medications, including Eric Harris at Bowling for Columbine. And we went out there. We filmed all of the parents and all the students we could. And they all said they were both normal till they started taking Effexor and Prozac, and then they just went ballistic. And yet to this day, every 24 hours between 22 and 24, GIs, some active, most retired, put a gun in their mouth and blow their brains out. Now, I did the math going back to when this started. That's over 160,000 GIs have killed themselves. That's more than all the combatants, including in the Vietnam War and everything since. And yet not a single study. No one stopping. Say, you know something? All these people were generally on medications they got when they were in the theater. Maybe we should look at the chemical imbalance that the drugs cause, including hyperagitation, isolation, paranoia, delusional psychoses that allow them to commit these crimes against other people without any thought. Well, I happen to have interviewed these people, a lot of them, and they said that the only treatment the government ever gives you is drugs. So we've got mass suicide by vets. We've got mass suicide by children, senior citizens. We've got drug overdose. We have all these Americans by the tens of millions diagnosed with a mental condition, and there is zero science behind any of it. How is that possible, and how's the media not covered this? Your thoughts, please.
Well, I have a lot of background experience in this, Gary, that you may not even know about. I've been a medical expert in trials involving the Columbine shootings and Eric Harris, and I've been a medical expert involved in the Holmes murders at the theater in Colorado, and in other cases of mass murder. I've testified before as the chief witness before the Veterans Affairs Committee on what's happening to our vets and how many of them are getting suicidal and killing themselves. Psychiatry is the political arm, and I would not have said this when we first met, Gary. I would not have gone this far, but it's becoming clearer and clearer, and it's getting clearer and clearer during COVID-19. And that is, psychiatry is the political arm of the anti-democratic, anti-freedom, dark forces in the world. And in the world, we have struggled from the very beginning. That's what the story of the Old Testament is, about this struggle between people who are going to take responsibility for themselves and want to be free to live their lives, and then the people who don't want to do that, the kings, the brothers, the fathers, and other human beings, the governments, who want to control and destroy and murder. And it's now very clear, and you can track it right through its whole history, that psychiatry has been the cutting arm of taking human beings who are struggling spiritually, struggling emotionally, struggling psychologically, like the children who are being so oppressed by the COVID-19 political measures, the fake science, the fake public health science that's oppressing the kids so badly, as well as the rest of us. And psychiatry has always been the arm that justifies it. So psychiatry is very, very happy to step in to a situation where a child is depressed because he can't smile at his friends and they can't see them smiling back, and he feels like he's a vector of disease, and he better stay away from people because he's going to carry a disease, or the people are going to give him a disease. They're happy to go in and drug that kid, but they will never say, but look what the society is doing to him. They will never say that, because that's what they're covering up, is any sound criticism of the conditions of society. I would not have probably even gone this far a few years ago, but it's very, very clear what the function is. And psychiatry is the only profession, now it's spread to other areas of the health profession, that can lock you up for your own safety or the safety of others. That's not supposed to happen in a democratic constitutional republic, where you're supposed to have to go through a trial and present evidence to a jury of your peers before you can be locked up as a criminal. So instead they lock you up under, quote, civil law, which is just a way of getting around the timeless protections that have been evolving, since way, way back about, people being able to have their freedom unless proven that they must lose it. So psychiatry is really cutting edge of just distracting us from all the issues in the culture. When you look at psychiatry, you'll see it has even been empowered, to have these massive lockups, these state mental hospitals filled up until the 50s until they just started throwing people out because they were too expensive. It wasn't because they were being helped. Giant lockups, sometimes with 10,000 or more people in one facility up on a hill outside of a city or a town. Nowhere in the Western world was that kind of oppression tolerated. And then going into how it's the tool of totalitarianism, in our book, The War Against Children of Color, we have a chapter on the role of psychiatry in Nazi Germany. And also on my website, I published an important scientific article in a European medical journal about this, about how the first calls for mass extermination were not from the Nazis, but from the psychiatrists in the 1920s, before Hitler had taken power. They were talking about useless eaters and exterminating people, people who were just taking who were costly to the state. It all fits in with the powerful state, minimizing costs and things like that, controlling people, getting rid of the useless eaters. And the first mass exterminations were carried out by the organized psychiatry out of Berlin, evaluating forms sent to them from the state hospitals, quote, euthanasia forms. Just about everybody that got a form was said to be suitable for euthanasia. They didn't even allow the Jews this, quote, merciful death. The Jews were excluded from this. And they killed tens of thousands of German children who were disabled, mentally disabled people just locked up in old age homes and mental hospitals, which are often just people who don't have families to support them in some way or another anymore. And they actually developed the first extermination centers from the psychiatric field that were put into operation as soon as Hitler took over. Places called Hadamar and Sonnenstein that we never hear about, that became the forerunner of the Nazi extermination camps, literally.
Peter, in fact, there is a film, a documentary, that was made at the time to celebrate this. And what they would do, they would have the propagandists working out of Joseph Goebbels' office, they would shine lights underneath patients' faces to distort how they looked. So they would look kind of strange, and justifying that it was for the betterment of all society.
Yes.
These poor suffering people would never be normal, would be, and they celebrated. I actually saw the film where the Nazi doctors, psychiatrists, were sharing champagne because the last of the people in this one major hospital were gone.
Yes.
And that was one of the first places they used the gas downstairs, and they special fitted, took them in there, gassed them, and they were gone. I'm going to address something that's more current. I've examined carefully Klaus Schwab's background. I've read dozens of articles submitted by Klaus Schwab and those that he has selected to be a part of the World Economic Forum, and those almost all come from Davos, that kind of entitled elite, narcissistic, megalomaniac sociopaths, in my opinion. And the ones who tell us about global warming, yes, but then fly on private jets. And we're vegan and they're eating meat, but they're the experts, right? In any case, now the movement is to get vaccine cards that then can be used so everybody has to have a vaccine card to function in society. And now they're going towards a cashless society. So if you want to buy something, anything, you have to have a card. The card then is part of the internet of all things, your medical records, your social credit scores, how good you are as a person, what you support, who you voted for. anything in your background. They'll know everything. And all this will be down there on this chip. And Klaus Schwab in 2016, I played it for this audience just last week, bragged at a closed conference of World Economic Forum leaders that our next move, which will be in the next 4 or 5 years, that's now, to get a chip physically implanted that would have all this coded material. So they would sell it. And you know how easy it is to sell to the American public something. One less work, you don't want to, okay, get a chip, and then just swipe the chip and you can buy anything. You immediately know how much money you have, what your bills are. This will pay for everything. You want medicine, don't worry about it. This will read what you need. It'll read your blood pressure, your blood sugar, it'll read everything, and we'll give you exactly what you need. And so the average person's thinking, that's great. Now in comes another division. And I played this clip, and boy, if you haven't seen it, ask Richard Gale to send it, or Jesse to send it to you. This is a highly respected full professor at Yale in ethics talking about how to weaponize a virus and why that can be done through DARPA, and he's getting money from DARPA. And they're not hiding this agenda. So now they're looking at transhumanism, the very thing you were mentioning. Now, part of this transhumanism is that Klaus Schwab was talking about having it implanted in the brain. But this guy's saying, that was 2016, this guy is current, and he's saying, we've got new technology that we don't have to go into the brain to control the brain. It's all in that chip. And the access to the cloud with artificial intelligence. Well, hold on, there's thousands of ethicists saying that you don't want to be turning over all policy making, all legal aspects, all ethical aspects to something that you cannot control. And there were examples at one TED talk given of the things that have happened when we've trusted artificial intelligence. So now the latest thing is artificial intelligence debated itself. This was an interesting, and almost no one's seen this. And the outcome of the debate was, if you want freedom, don't let artificial intelligence anywhere near making these decisions for you. So, because when you start being one of those Silicon Valley guys who's, or women who are getting lots of money, you know, and you can do anything you want, you can buy anything you want, and now you think, well, we need to have more power for us over everyone else. And the vaccine passport is just the beginning of getting people to comply, because if people are not willing to do their homework, not willing to see what informed consent means, not willing to look at the true science behind these vaccines and look at all the dead and injured people, then they don't deserve any better. So let's get them to conform. So now transhumanism is the next stage. And they'll try to say, oh, you know, with this transhumanism and stem cell therapy used by artificial intelligence, we can regrow that diseased liver and that heart and that brain. So that's already being promised. So I see how easy this will be to sell the American public, because we can be sold anything, because we've lost our capacity overall for critical thinking. And the final part of this that I'm going to ask you to address is this. I've already seen what is coming. There's a whole new generation of artificial humans that have been programmed by artificial intelligence of how to respond to any issue, any question. And these are physically very attractive. They're not the old kind of irky-jerky, robotic, you know, sounding, looking. They just look perfect. They don't get old. Anything you want, they'll do. Now imagine how many people are so frustrated they live on porn or some vicarious way of living triangulated through other people in their fantasies. They don't have healthy relationships. They don't have a healthy understanding of their own sexuality. Imagine how quickly those are going to be lining up to buy them, because now you don't need a partner, because you've got one that will never talk back, never has bad breath, never has an off day, is always going to say yes to everything, laugh at your stupid jokes, and be compliant. That means that the concept of Stepford Wise science fiction becomes science fact. Add one last thing onto it. Let's just say that you're not into having, you know, a companion at home who will do anything you want. But instead, you want to be able to experience any reality in the world through a virtual. And now that virtual reality has taken a whole quantum step. Now you put on this headpiece and you want something, you can have thousands of programs. You can go anywhere in the world. You can simulate any situation, and you're there through this virtual reality. So why do anything when you can just put on this headset and be anywhere, do anything you want with no risks to you? But of course, to do that, you're going to be spending most of your day doing this. Oh, and by the way, artificial intelligence, automation, foreign visas from countries where the students actually are smart and study, and also the robotics, those are taking the place of probably 70% of American jobs, including many physicians, diagnosticians, because now the artificial intelligence can do a better diagnosis of many conditions than a doctor could, even a specialist. So you're going to see tens of millions of Americans out of work. So give them some low form of guaranteed income. Don't have them do anything except stay all day with their robotic partners or on artificial intelligence, and they're going to chill out, and you're going to make sure that they're a chilled nation because you can control their biochemistry. You can control everything because you're in their body, you're in their mind. That's what's happening as we speak. It's not the future. It's right now, and it's only going to accelerate within the next 3 years. Most of a society in the United States and certainly other countries will be completely compliant, and the great economic reset by the rulers of the world will be in place. Your thoughts on this, please.
Well, it leads right into what I've spent with my wife 13 to 16 months, 10 to 15 hours a day doing with our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. We have actually documented who the great chunk of these people are. Once we started with Fauci, we went to Bill Gates. We found Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab and Fauci announcing the decade of the vaccine. And then we found that by 2010, by 2011-12, they had the cooperation of the United Nations getting their goals of supranational control between billionaires and specific agencies of the various governments, particularly in the United States, working very early on with the FDA, with the CDC, with Fauci and NIH, and developing a network of people who made decisions without regard, especially for the Western democracies. Never, never promoting individual freedom, never promoting constitutional restraints, never promoting a sound legal system, but always those who know best. And they would hold conferences. You've mentioned the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, and over the past several years, also Michael Bloomberg, who is doing a parallel conference in November, Schwab in January. And they bring together the major U.S. corporations, many of them, for example, top executives at these meetings, McDonald's at one of them, IBM, MasterCard, FedEx, Prudential, Goldman Sachs, Honeywell, Moderna, of course, and how they began to plan. I found the master plan of Bill Gates. It's in the book. And how he developed this master plan with the World Health Organization, basically that the billionaires and the drug companies like Pfizer and Moderna in particular early on, working with other investors around the world, would, with the World Health Organization, share governance of the world in the coming pandemic, which they were always talking about, the coming pandemic. And within a few years, actually, before COVID-19, talking about it being a SARS-CoV pandemic, working together with China, making SARS-CoV viruses funded by NIH, some of it funded also by DARPA, funded by other agencies, but the biggest ones being NIH and NIAID. And ultimately, all of them kowtowing to the Chinese Communist Party. And if you look at the, in 2020, the big January conference by Klaus Schwab, dozens of Chinese bigwigs there hobnobbing with Americans, and our president spoke there at the time, Donald Trump. I don't think he had any idea what the heck they were doing and how they were going to just destroy his presidency, take freedom out from under America. And then you go to Michael Bloomberg's big conference, a virtual conference, because it's during COVID in November of 2020, when Trump has been unseated. And they are literally celebrating that now that Trump is gone, the influence of patriotism is gone, the influence of God is gone, the influence of the Constitution, Bill of Rights, the founding principles of America, now that all that's gone again, been going for a long time, now really gone, we got rid of that party, that breakaway party from the Republicans. And they celebrated it at the conference. Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York City, the conference co-sponsored by a CCP front group, one co-sponsor, Communist Chinese Party, and a big celebration of the great impact of COVID-19, the last meetings of the conference with Bill Gates and Moderna meeting together, and other key people, Peter Daszak, who represents ultimately our miserable guy from NIAID. I hate to even remember his name.
Yeah, Anthony Fauci.
So this is a highly organized affair moving toward totalitarianism, the destruction of the Western democracies. That's why we can wonder, well, why do we have so many deaths? Why do we put up with tens of thousands of deaths from vaccines when we used to withdraw a vaccine if it had somewhere between 25 and 50 deaths? We'd examine it and surely withdraw it if there were 100 deaths. Now we have tens of hundreds and thousands of deaths reported to the CDC within 24 to 48 hours. The vaccine, very clear what's going on, because they are out. And I never thought I'd say this, Gary. They are out to cull the population. They especially want to get rid of the old, the useless, the impaired, the costly in the medical system. They are doing it. It is no longer that we can begin to think of this as accidental side effects. The humiliation of our children, the making them into obedient little kids who will do almost anything that's ever asked of them as they grow up because they were taught to do it as children. But we do, Gary, I'll end with this for now. We do document who's behind all of this in the depth that's never before been seen on Earth in COVID-19 and the global predators. And it's a best-selling book now, and it's doing really, really well, and people are seeing it as the finally, you know, taking the cover off of this whole thing.
Peter, we're out, virtually out of time. I want to take the last minute, last 60 seconds. The next time you come on, I'd like for you to spend the hour talking about the pathology, the psychosis, the paranoid delusional factors behind the woke culture and how destructive they've been, the identity politics, the D'Angelo, who's written what I consider personally, my own opinion, the second most dangerous book in history behind Mein Kampf, and by telling Caucasians, all Caucasians ever born, you're born of prejudice, you're a racist, no matter what you do. No true intellect, no one who knows history, no one who's in psychology, no one that I know in ethics would for a heartbeat accept that. And yet we've had hundreds of thousands of those same people stay quiet because the attacks against anyone who challenges these new group of people is formidable. They've gotten people's jobs ruined. They've gotten tenured professors to lose their tenureship. So this is our next topic, all right? and I look forward to that conversation. I read your book, You and Your Wife. It's a terrific book, very documented. And I'm glad that you spend some special time on Bill Gates in there. For a person who didn't graduate from college, for a person who has never been a clinician, to have as much power in the world as he has today over everyone else who's more qualified, and especially at the ethical and moral level, is a reflection of how far we've come from decency, ethics, and honoring life. Thank you very much for being on today, and we look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you.
Peter Bregan.